We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is a Locker Room production.
Hey, I'm chilling, dude.
How's it going?
It's going well. Once we get people in here, you know, if they want to know what's going on, you know, talk about how I'm out here at the cabin in, what, freaking Pennsylvania.
Where in Pennsylvania?
It's by, I think, a town called, like, Snydersville or something.
I've never even heard of that. What? I'm surprised. How did, I guess this was Diana production, correct?
Yeah, her and her and a couple of her friends.
How'd she know about this place is what I'm getting
I think her friends actually ended up, they found it, and it has like a hot tub, but it's not the best place, to be honest.
The
pictures, Dan, the pictures sell a product that makes it look a lot better than it really is.
That doesn't sound great, but let me go ahead and tweet out the link to this locker room so we can get some people in here.
Awesome.
Let's see. Join us for, and this is bad radio. For those of you listening on the podcast afterwards, we promise this won't take too long, but bad radio for the moment. Join us for the Giants talk on Big Blue Banter and Locker Room. Live Q&A now, and hopefully we get some people in here soon. Otherwise, it's just going to be me talking to Nick about this falsely advertised cabin that he's staying in, where the pictures just didn't do it justice people in here. The time between me tweeting and me talking about your falsely advertised cabin experience, we had a few people join us. Lucas, Todd, Mike Marcel. There he is. Says, hey, guys, what up? What up? What up?
Hey, buddy.
Let's see. Has anybody requested to speak is the real question, though. Because otherwise, again, we will be discussing Nick's poorly advertised cabin experience, which nobody really wants to hear about, I don't think. But maybe. Anybody want to jump in and be the first person to request to speak? Somebody get in there. Come on. Lucas, Mike, anybody.
Maybe we could always talk about Danny Shelton, that edition. I'm sure we'll have that on our next podcast, though, as well.
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, Nick was away in the cabin. We called this thing. I feel like it's like the Hills Have Eyes type situation you're kind of building up to me, where, like, you went to this cabin. Or what's that other horror movie where, like, there's an outbreak in the cabin?
That's Cabin Fever, man. Cabin Fever is a very, very – that you know me personally, Dan. That's the kind of thing that gave me, like, scars as a child.
I never actually saw Cabin Fever, though. I heard it was actually pretty good. I'm not a fan of the horror genre at all.
You're not a zombie guy, right, Dan?
I actually like zombie stuff. Okay. I like the post-apocalyptic stuff. I like the zombie stuff. I just don't like any horror stuff that's like the aim is to scare you and they use like gore, just like that type of stuff that I'm just find pretty stupid. Okay, let's see. Lucas Watson joins the chat. What up, Luke?
Lucas!
Thanks.
Kazi. Luke Kazi, what up?
Not much. So I know we're just getting into a draft talk now. But from where we stand, where do you guys think are, in your opinion, the highest position of need in like an order of a few for the Giants?
Yeah, it's actually kind of funny. Dan, you and I, we did the best podcast that we ever recorded was about this. It was pre-free agency, but I think I could speak for myself. For me, I still think offensive line has to be probably the highest priority because it's the biggest question mark. We're all hoping that all of these players, Matt Pair, Shane Lemieux, Will Hernandez, even Andrew Thomas, reach this type of upside. But if that doesn't happen, then Daniel Jones isn't going to have the time to find Kenny Galladay and John Ross and all these other new shiny weapons. So I believe it's offensive line with also the edge and just some type of defensive player that can affect the pass rush being a close second.
Yeah, and just to provide a little more context there, Nick says it's the best podcast ever recorded. We make a joke about that off pod because, unfortunately, it was devastating audio situation where it was so bad we couldn't even release it. We tried to doctor it as best as we could, but it was just – it was probably a 3.3 out of 10 on the quality file. And we refuse to post anything that's below, I don't know, a 7. So as far as needs go, though, I am on the same page as Nick. We're not always on the same page, but it seems like lately we've been all on the same page. I mean, to me, there's two ways this Giants team can go wrong in 2021. That's how good I think they've built it. I think they're really in a position where they could be a really good team next year, 11-win team, potentially more if Jones takes a huge jump in 2021. But there are ways this can go really wrong. The ways this can go really wrong are this. You're relying on a late third-round pick in Matt Parrott to be a right tackle starter. You're relying on a fifth-round pick, Shane Lemieux, to be a left guard starter, and he was bad last year. There's no way around it. He was okay to good in that range in the run game and legitimately one of the worst pass-blocking starting guards in the NFL, if you're going to be objective about it. And then you're relying on two other players who we like a lot, Nick Gates and Thomas, but again, they're both young, and you never know. Things can take a step back. And then finally, at right guard, Will Hernandez potentially, I guess, or Zach Fulton. So if you just roll into the season with that group, I think you're asking a lot and you're just taking on a lot of risk. There's obviously a lot of upside if all of them take a step forward. But because I would rather not jump into a season with a lot of risk in a situation where if your offensive line fails, you have no chance to win in the NFL, I do believe offensive line remains number one need for this team. I'll put guard before tackle and hope that pair can take that jump. And then I would go edge 2. I would go off-ball linebacker, actually, 3. I would still want to add something there. And then I would actually go with wide receiver coming in after that.
Awesome.
Yeah, man.
Well, can't wait for the Micah Parsons pod to drop. I went to Penn State, and so looking forward to that.
Awesome. What year did you graduate, bud?
2019.
Oh, nice. It makes me feel really old, Lucas, but good for you, buddy.
Thank you.
We're both excited to really get into Michael Parsons' tape to kind of see what he can bring to this Patrick Graham defense. I mean, honestly, just looking at the highlights and watching college football back in 2019, I really think it would be something special.
Yeah, it would be really cool. He's way up our wish list as of now. But again, who knows, once we dive into the tape, but I feel like we're going to come away thinking the same thing. All right, Lucas, thanks for joining us. It looks like we have another speaker request. Stan, what's going on, my man?
What's up, Stan?
Stan, you there, buddy?
Yeah, I cut out for a second, but now I'm back here. Can you guys hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
All right, cool. You guys doing all right?
Yeah, man. How are you?
Yeah, can't complain. Can't complain. Just babysitting the kids at the moment. So if you hear anything, that's what's going on.
Are they Giants fans?
that's a loaded question. They complain a little bit when the NFL season starts because they know, you know, dad's not going to be around quite as much on Sundays. but they've come around to the idea. They understand the routine, you know.
Good.
It's just how it is. But listen, as always, thanks for the good work from you guys. One thing I haven't heard you guys talk about a whole lot that I'm curious to hear. I've heard some rumblings. I don't know exactly where it comes from, but of like character concerns for Parsons. And I feel like maybe that we need to give more credence to that. You know, I feel like that's a big deal for this Gettleman Judge regime. And I'm curious if you guys have an opinion on that, because I don't feel like you guys have discussed that a whole lot.
Yeah, I think for me, and then I'll see where Nick's at on this, I kind of am putting all my eggs in the basket of the Giants have Sean Spencer on their staff, Coach Spencer on their staff now, and he worked with Parsons at Penn State. He was there with Parsons at Penn State. So I think he has a much better idea of if these character concerns are real or are they not than anybody else could or would. I mean, listen, you talk to Dave Gettleman and ask him about DeAndre Baker, and he will be perplexed because they weren't on the ground. They didn't have a coach at Georgia who was then on the Giants staff and can tell them everything about DeAndre Baker's work habits, everything about DeAndre Baker's off-field stuff, everything he did in between practices, out of practice, in games. But this guy, Spencer, can tell the Giants about Parsons and who he is. So I feel completely comfortable if the Giants take Parsons that the character won't have another DeAndre Baker situation. Now, where does it stem from? There was a report, I believe a year or two ago, of Parsons being involved in a hazing incident at Penn State with another couple Penn State players, one who's actually in the NFL right now with the Carolina Panthers and hasn't had any issues off the field since joining the team. But that's really where it stems from. It's from one report of a hazing incident that if you read the details, it's not a good report. It doesn't look good on Parsons if it's true, but it is still a report, and I believe that from everything I've heard from the people I know who are close to that Penn State team, he actually has, you know, they speak well of his character. And like I said, I'm just going to defer to Spencer on this one. Where do you stand, Nick?
It's not even just Spencer. We've got to remember, Pat Flaherty was just brought back to the New York Giants staff, and he was with Penn State from 2019 to 2020, so he would also have some insight into Micah Parsons' character. I mean, I can't speak to what exactly happened at Penn State, but if any NFL team has an edge over other NFL teams, it has to be the New York Giants with two guys who come from the program when Mike Parsons was there.
Yeah, true. Did he overlap with Saquon?
Yeah, I think they should have been there at the same time. They were.
For 1 year, I believe, yeah.
Okay, interesting. All right, if you guys right now had to make a pretty substantial wager in terms of who the Giants are going to end up picking number one, their first pick in the draft, who would you guys go with?
For me, honestly, right now, and again, this stuff can flip-flop, and just what I think they're going to do, I kind of think Micah Parsons, bro. I just have this, like, one of those feelings, man, that the Giants, you know, they all showed up to his, everyone who could, they showed up to his pro day, you know, have a conversation with him. That's just, you know, checking the box kind of thing. But if that character stuff is all squared away, I can see them investing in that. But it also depends on if someone like Slater falls down that low. Would they be interested in that? I think they would be. I'm not fully confident Slater's going to be there at 11, though.
For me, I'm going to stick with the same pick I made about a month ago. And just to be clear, just so people know, I know Nick said it, but I want to reiterate, this is not who Nick or I would be taking if we were the GM. This is who we think they're going to take. And so if I had to put the money down, like you said, on who I think they're going to take, I'm going to stick with the prediction I made a month ago, and it will be Devontae Smith out of Bama. I think he checks all the boxes that Gettleman looks for and that Judge looks for from a character standpoint, from a work ethic standpoint. He is that Heisman Trophy winner. They love that type of stuff. He played in the SEC at Bama against top competition, and I just think ultimately he will be the pick at 11.
All right, good stuff. One more question. I listened to your Waddle pod, which was a good one as always. One thing you guys didn't discuss a ton, kind of mentioned it in passing, but was his return game on the punt returns. Do you think he would, if they drafted him, he would step right in and be their punt returner?
I personally think it would be probably somewhat of a competition between Waddle. They would probably give Adoree Jackson a chance. And I don't even rule out Jabril Peppers yet, but I think ultimately it would be Jalen Waddle, especially since the Giants are somewhat loaded at wide receiver. He could do a punt return, sit out that first play, have Darius Slayton play that, and then put him back into the game. But also remember, he was also hurt on special teams as well. So I don't know how much the Giants are going to weigh into that. He got hurt in that Georgia game in a special teams play.
I'm going to go with he would step right into that role immediately because, as I mentioned on the pod, he averaged 6 yards more than any other player. I believe it was either in SEC or Alabama history on punt returns. That's the type of punt return he is. Also, I think more so than that, as far as Adoree Jackson and Jabril Peppers goes, which would be the real competition there, both of those players are going to be counted on for probably 100%, close to 100% of the snaps in year one. In 2021. I don't think that if they draft a Waddle at 11, he will be counted on for 100% of the snaps on offense. So you kind of have a little bit more to work with there, and you have a little bit less risk when you're putting someone like that on special teams.
I'm guessing, yeah, and I'm guessing to your point, Dan, he's probably a little bit more gifted. I mean, those guys
Yes.
are pretty gifted returners, but I'm guessing he's a little bit more gifted in that game.
He would be the most gifted athlete on the Giants roster immediately if they drafted him, in my opinion.
All right, guys, that's all for me. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you. All right, let's see who's next. Mike is next. What is going on, Mike? You there, Mike?
Hey, what's happening, Dan? Nick,
What up?
what's going on?
Hey, what's up, Mike?
Oh, man, I can't complain, guys. Couple things. Dan, from your Vegas trip, did you ever hit up Sapphires?
That we won't talk about on this show. Hit me up
All
after
right.
the pod.
All right, sounds good.
It's a family show. This is a family show, Mike.
Got it. Two, I listened to the Ja'Marr Chase breakdown today, and you guys brought up some really good points about how Slayton will be 1 year closer to ending his contract. You know, Sterling Shepard is, you know, one concussion away, and how like it would be wise for the Giants to invest in a wide receiver, maybe not at 11, but somewhere along the line, which is great, like line of thinking. I just don't think that that is what our GM is thinking per se. I do think, however, that possibly second or third round, depending on how the board falls, we should look at a wide receiver. At 11, I'd love to trade back. Obviously, it takes two to tango, but if you can't get, you know, obviously, a Rashawn Slater or the kid from USC or Parsons, let's say. I saw that the kid from Washington, the defensive edge rusher from Washington, Tryon, I believe his name
Yeah,
is.
Joe Tryon.
Yeah, was kind of sort of moving up some boards. I wanted to get your thoughts and opinions on him. And
Yeah,
then I have one more question.
okay. Yeah, I watched some try-on tape. I think he's going to have a really, really good pro day, to be honest. And I know he's moving up boards. And I think after his pro day, a lot of people might start buying into him a little bit more because he is a longer defensive end with good initial quickness, can get up the arc, has some bend to him, uses his hands pretty well. And I don't think he's a great run defender, but I think it's something that he can kind of grow into. I mean, he's a Pac-12 pass rusher who, you know, they don't always have the best hit rate, but you don't scout the helmet, scout the player. And I think Joe Tryon is somebody that could be a good pick in the second round. I've seen him hyped in the first round a little bit. I'm not quite there yet, but I do respect the people that kind of put him up in that area. But I do like his quickness and his ability to kind of use his hands. And I think he is kind of in a high upside type of pass rusher.
Okay. And then my other question was is being that, you know, we've really spent a lot of big bucks in free agency, can you guys share some insight or any rhyme or reason as to why we have not even, I mean, I don't know if they have or if they haven't, but opened up discussions to extending Jabril Peppers? I mean, he kind of reminds me of like that Swiss Army knife, like that Buda Baker, Minkah Fitzpatrick type in Graham's defense. And to see him potentially hit free agency next year, or, you know, kind of see Dave Gettleman flub how he did Evan Ingram, you know, get, extend him. Or no, was Peppers a second rounder or was he a first?
A
He was a
he
first.
was a first rounder.
Okay, so to pick up his fifth year option and then, you know, at the deadline, possibly not trade him for some assets, or you know how they like to sell us. Oh well, we're gonna get a comp pick down the line for so and so or whatever. But like that just bothers me because, like you guys are saying about wide receivers depth, like right now, yes, we do have safety depth. You know, you have McKinney, Logan Ryan, Peppers, and depending on how you view Julian Love. But I mean, after next year, you know, Logan Ryan's down to one more year left, and then you got Peppers hitting free agency. You know what I mean? So I just wanted to get you guys' opinion on that.
Yeah, I actually tweeted something about this. It's funny you bring this up a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago. It was the most surprising development of the offseason, how he wasn't re-signed yet. I will say this, I think he will ultimately be re-signed. This is one that I don't feel nervous about because just from watching him interact on the sidelines, from seeing some of the mic'd ups and seeing how close he is to Joe Judge in some of those clips, and how really there's a lot of times where Judge and Graham will come to him, and he really is, in my mind, the leader of that defense, both vocally and on the field. And if you watch the film like me and Nick did, and Nick could correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I don't think there was any doubt that this defense took a massive step back when he had to miss a few snaps last year. He played most of the season, but he had to miss a few snaps at times with injuries, and the defense just looked completely different without him on the field. So ultimately, I feel it is weird. It's definitely odd, but I do think they'll find room for him next year. It might mean at the expense of a Sterling Shepard, potentially. It might mean at the expense of, hopefully, Riley Dixon, who is going to have like a $4 million cap it next year to be a bottom-tier punter in my mind. But does that one still perplexes me? But I have confidence that he'll remain on this roster. It is weird, but I do have confidence. What do you feel about this, Nick?
I mean, I have confidence as well. I don't think Jabril Peppers is going to go anywhere, especially if Dave Gettleman's a general manager. I mean, he made that trade, and to be honest, Jabril Peppers has been the biggest impact of that trade from the with the Cleveland Browns. So I think he's going to remain here, and he's a perfect fit for what Patrick Graham wants. He's a perfect fit for the current NFL, being that hybrid linebacker safety type who can, you know, play the run against heavier personnel packages, 12 personnel, yet still drop into coverage, has the athletic ability and the hips to do that, which we saw time and time again. So I think he's going to remain a Giant as well.
And I think he's just coming into his own, because it looked clear to me that, remember, this is a guy who played a weird hybrid role at Michigan, where he's still kind of learning what the Giants want him to do and what Patrick Graham wants him to do. And it looked clear to me, at least, that he took a big step forward specifically as a pass defender last year, which was really promising development for him. So I thought he was much better in that regard in 2020 versus 2019. So yeah, I'm with Nick. I'm not worried about it, even though it is weird that he wasn't re-signed. I would agree with you on that.
Man, love the podcast. Thanks, Nick.
Awesome.
Ice cream and chips, man.
Wait, what? Dude won't eat anything. You should see this kid's diet, man. It's one of the most sad things ever. If he eats 50 grams of carbs in a week, it would be a miracle. An absolute miracle.
I consume more than 50 carbs a day. All right,
there's not even a chance that it was more than a day. Is not even close. All right, let's bring on Todd. Todd, you still there with us, bud? Avocado Todd, you there, bud? I love this avocado avatar.
That is a nice avatar.
All right, Todd. Calling all Todds.
Dan, you want to know something weird about avocados that I've thought about?
Yeah, what is it?
Everybody loves avocado toast, right?
But I wouldn't say everybody, but
a lot of people love avocado toast, but I never seen anybody eat an avocado or like a guacamole sandwich.
That's a good point. You would.
I've never seen it.
That is actually interesting. First of all, avocado toast. Let me go on a little rant here while we wait for Todd, and then we may have to move on to someone. Todd, if you're there, just butt in. Otherwise, we'll put you back in the rotation if you just request to speak. But avocado toast, people out here paying $12 for a piece of bread toasted with avocado on it. Those people are insane to me. $12. Like, what are we talking about here? I don't even understand that. You could literally buy avocado and bread at the supermarket and make 17 avocado toast for the price of one. But you know what? That's life these days. So, Todd, we're going to move on from you. We're going to bring in Apurva. I think that I pronounced that right. Are you there with us? I know I pronounced your last name, Shaw.
Hello, guys. I think I lost you there.
Are you there?
Yeah. Hey, sorry, guys. I don't know if you caught any of my question at all. I just totally lost the sound there for a minute. But my question, I guess, was just on Gettleman and maybe if this Leopard's kind of changing this.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
spots at all. I was reading Jordan Renan's piece on ESPN the other day about, you know, how Gettleman looks kind of silly after the Dolphins, you know, traded back, traded up, and still accumulated picks and are probably going to get the guys that they're targeting. And in light of, like, Dalvin Tomlinson walking out the door and kind of getting replaced with Danny Shelton, do you guys think Gettleman and his approach, that he's actually reevaluating his approach to roster building with moves like that, or do you think that's more just Joe Judge's influence, and Gettleman's always been fairly flexible in terms of targeting free agents that his coaching staff, even under the prior two coaches, you know, he's kind of picked players for those guys according to what their desires might be.
The economy is made up of real people doing real stuff, and it affects everything. Which you obviously know since you're a real person doing real stuff. Marketplace is here to help you get smart about everything beyond the what of the day's business and economic news. We dig into the how and the why with the real people driving our economy. From big tech and interest rates to small businesses and what's happening at the Fed, Marketplace breaks it all down so you don't have to. Listen to Marketplace wherever you get your podcasts.
Like any good team, hiring the right employees for your front office is just as important as recruiting the best players for the game. That's why you need Indeed. Indeed is the job site that makes hiring as easy as 1, 2, 3. Post, screen, and interview all on Indeed. Get your quality shortlist of candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description faster. Only pay for the candidates that meet must-have qualifications, and schedule and complete video interviews in your Indeed dashboard. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined. Get started right now with a free $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through June 30th. Terms and conditions apply.
You've heard us talking about it before, and we're back again to talk to you about hosting your own podcast here at Blue Wire. And there's no better place to host than Blue Wire Hustle. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or, if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. And the best part is, you can get all of this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So, if you're ready to do more than just listening to us talk about your favorite team, then make your voice heard in Hustle. Acceptance into this program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box for the episode to find out more, but that's bwhustle.com/join.
I think it's the latter of what you said. I think Dave Gettleman has a solid marriage with his coaching staff a lot of the time, and we saw with James Betcher when they brought over all those former Arizona Cardinals, much to the chagrin of a lot of Giants fans, to be honest, seeing Antoine Bethea playing middle of the field, close safety, 30 yards off the ball wasn't really a great thing. But I feel like Dave Gettleman does actually a pretty solid job at doing that with his coaching staff. And I feel like Danny Shelton's somebody that they're familiar with. And he's also somebody who can two-gap, hold up the point of attack, anchor down, allow the linebacker to scrape over the top, do all those things that you needed to replace because Dalvin Tomlinson was so vital. Now, obviously, Danny Shelton doesn't have the athletic ability of Dalvin Tomlinson, but I honestly think that addition, and we haven't really talked about it yet on the podcast, we will, I think that addition is going to be a good addition for this, for the continuity what the Giants want to do on early downs. So, yeah, I think latter what you said, Todd, when it comes to Dave Gettleman, and I don't even know if it's Leppard changing his spots as much because I feel like, I can't really speak about his Carolina days, but I feel like he did that a similar thing with the Pat Shermers of the world. Yeah.
I would say that, just to add to that, I would say if we want to see if the Leopard's changing the spot, let's wait for the draft. The draft is really
where. Yes.
So for free agency, like, people can talk about anything they want in free agency, but ultimately, the Giants were the only team to offer Kenny Golladay a long term deal, and right. Dory Jackson took the most money. And I mean, like, the free agency is mostly about, and like Nick said, it is, he does a good job of, you know, pairing the players that fit the system that the coaches want. But free agency is a lot about money. No matter what people tell you, it's the truth of it. And in the draft, that's where I think we'll see, you know, will he consider trading back and acquiring more picks in the day three? Will he, you know, those are the types of spots where, or will he take another ID? Will he maybe take an IDL high again? You know, those are the times where you got to see really where his roster building comes into play. But I do think, like you said, it could be an influence of Judge. People are suggesting Judge has more of an influence now on the roster building strategy. That's something, unfortunately, me and Nick don't have too much insight on. We're not in the building, and even if we were, they're not giving out anything these days to those beats. It's not like the days of Mike Garafolo on the beat, so it's hard to know. But I think the draft is where you'll get your true test for that.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I feel like too, you know, with the holes that they've plugged in what everybody seems like, you know, we agree that it's been a really successful, you know, off season for free agency and filling those needs, those obvious needs.
I think it's been a near perfect offseason. I really do believe the Giants, Dave Gettleman, Joe Judge, Kevin Abrams have done as perfect of an offseason as they can till this point. Obviously, Devontae Booker, we would have rather them not done that, but in the end, that's a few million, and he's not even that bad of a player. You know, he's has some intriguing parts of his skill set that are okay. I mean, the only other one you might say is, okay, why didn't they go ahead and sign maybe like a Trey Turner and Andrew Norwell over Zach Fulton, but they don't really have the cap space at this point to do that, and I don't think they really want to dip too much further into the future because they've done it already enough.
Right. Now, having said that, too, how do you guys think, or do you have an opinion on, does this finally put them in a position to go best player available, whatever that means, given the roster shaping that they've done this offseason, or do you think they'll go with, you know, an offensive line, you know, or maybe fill out a wide receiver given the what the previous caller had said about, you know, being a couple injuries and a contract year away from being two guys down on the wide receiver depth chart. I mean, it seems like this is the year that they're like finally able to just take whoever they have the highest rated and go with that the way a good GM should approach roster building.
I would agree with that personally, Todd. I mean, I think they can go BPA, and BPA could end up being like, for all I know, I'm not 100% sure what how they value a lot of these guys, but it could be Rashawn Slater. It could be Micah Parsons. It could be a Jalen Waddle. It could be a Devonta Smith. I'm not really sure how they value all these types of players, but I mean, I think they have positioned themselves to go BPA, which is something that you always want your team to do. And that's sort of what free agency somewhat is for as well. I mean, you want to be able to go into the draft and not have a glaring hole. And I don't think the Giants have a glaring hole, but they have holes that do carry some concern. But I still think you can go BPA.
And I would add this. I actually think during Gettleman's tenure, he's actually done a really good job, he has done a job of sticking to BPA. I don't think that's part of his draft process that I would disagree with. The difference is BPA can be looked at in a lot of different spectrums. So BPA for one team is different than BPA for another team. The Giants had Dexter Lawrence likely as a top 5 overall player, top 10 overall player in that class. So when he fell to 17, they considered it an unbelievable bargain and a guaranteed BPA. Other teams who might view a interior defensive lineman that doesn't get that much of a pass rushing presence on an every down basis as because of that factor, not a player that they would view as a top 10 pick, even though he would be such a surefire draft pick like he has been. You know, when you drafted Dexter Lawrence 17, you knew you weren't getting a bust, but at the same time, you knew you weren't exactly getting someone who impacts the pass on every down. So I think it changes from team to team and what they consider BPA, but I actually do think the Giants are, and Gettleman as well, is not the type of GM that, and there are some bad GMs that do this. He's not the type of GM that takes players just because of the position they play.
Right. Excellent. Well, thanks again, guys. Enjoy the podcast. As always, I'll shut up and listen to everybody else's questions now. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for joining us, man. All right, let's see who's next on the list.
Apurva, are you here, bud?
Yeah, are you here? Apurva? Mr. Shah, are you here with us, buddy? All right, if you are, just jump in at some point. But for now, we're going to get Terrence in on the show. Terrence, you there, bud?
Hey, what's up, guys? Can you hear me?
Yeah, what's up, man? Buddy?
Not too much. I think the last person kind of was on a similar wavelength with me. But, yeah, I mean, we've gotten your thoughts on the current moves. But, you know, I've been listening to the show. I've really heard the love-hate with Dave Gettleman. But upon hearing your thinking this offseason was kind of a near-perfect offseason, I'm wondering, do we think he's maybe the right GM to be Giants should be continuing with? Does the Joe Judge Gettleman fitting sort of just work, or do we think maybe with the culture change in New York, players, they're finding it easier to have players come to the team. I'd love your thoughts, and maybe feel like some people were banging the Fire Gettleman drum. Curious if you, where you guys think that's at currently.
I actually want to step in first here, Dan. So for me, I think it's all tied to Daniel Jones. I really do. I think if Daniel Jones falls flat on his face this year and just kind of shows all of us that he can't be this professional quarterback that can take your team to the next level and really hack it and put himself into a top, not even like a top tier, like the top five, but be like a top half of the quarterback, you know, then I feel like if that's evident and Daniel Jones can't do that, I don't believe Dave Gettleman will be the general manager to make another quarterback selection. So that's kind of where I'm at with it. I'm not a huge Gettleman hater. Like I've never really been that way with Gettleman. I've criticized the moves that I felt like needed to be critiqued and criticized. But I would be hesitant to have him go out and select another quarterback. I think if Daniel Jones fails, then it's going to be time to move on.
That's a good way to look at it, that Nick looks at it. I think that's definitely how it will play out. I mean, if the Giants, at this point, John Mara put his foot on the table. He didn't come out and say they need to make the playoffs or things are going to change, but he gave this GM another spending spree. Like, remember, Gettleman walked in 2018 and John Mara handed him the keys and said, you can sign Nate Solder, you can sign Patrick Omame. And then he did it again last offseason with Bradberry Martinez. Now he did it again this season. They dipped into a ton of their future cap space. So to me, these aren't really the wins they're made out to be from a GM standpoint. I'll be honest with you, Terrence, and it's just my opinion. Wins as a GM come in the draft. That's how you build winning rosters. You draft the right players, and then you get them for cheap against the cap for 4 years or for 5 years under team control for those first-round picks. That's how you win. That's how you fix this roster long-term. So until that happens, I'm not ready to sit here and, you know, hand the keys over to him long term. But I do think this roster has really, really looked, based on their spending spree and how well they did in free agency both this year and last year, because remember, they had an amazing free agency last year with Ryan, with Martinez, with Bradberry. They have a really good roster for this next season, regardless kind of what happens in this draft. But to me, you know, you still have to look at things like using that early supplemental draft pick on Sam Beal, a guy who had shoulder problems. He came from a conference where he didn't really have to prove himself. And no other team used anything but a fourth, and the Giants used an early third. Drafting Will Hernandez at 34, who hasn't worked out. The Barkley decision. So there's still a lot of things that have affected this franchise. And remember, he's had a top 10 pick every, or top 6 pick every draft until this one. So there's still a lot that needs to be factored in. But ultimately, what Nick said is right. I mean, it just comes down in the end, ultimately, to Daniel Jones. Because unfortunately, in this sport, it's pretty much all about your quarterback in the end. There's all these other things we talk about, and you can't, it's true, you can't really win without an offensive line. That is true, but everything else really does come down to that quarterback. You look at, why did the Bills take that big jump? Josh Allen took that big jump. Who was playing in the Super Bowl? You know, obviously Patrick Mahomes and obviously Tom Brady. So in the end, ultimately, I think Nick's right. It will come down to Jones.
Cool. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. That was a cool question. All right, let's see who's next on this. Notorious VIG is next. Notorious VIG.
Oh, Notorious is coming in. What's good?
The bad news for you, Nick, is that you probably are you even familiar with Notorious VIG? Do you know who that is?
Yes, I'm aware who Notorious VIG is.
Okay. I wasn't sure after the Slim Shady LP and the Marshall Mathers takes, but I am glad. Oh, look. Looks like
Nick, don't take this. Don't take this anymore. I mean,
this... Notorious, it goes in one ear, it goes out the other. It's not
no,
a...
but it's at some point you have to punch the bully in the nose.
Trust me, this bully has been punched in the nose part of the time, and that's why right. It looks the way it does. Go on, though.
Dan,
what's going on,
Dan? Dan, you missed trading up for DeAndre.
Oh, no, yeah. No, we didn't go over them all. There's plenty
on Braden Smith for Will Hernandez. I mean, just it goes on and on. These terrible, terrible decisions this first couple of years. Oh, my God. But that's not what I want to talk about. So talk to me. All right. Speaking of second round guards, talk to me about who might be the guy that you could slot in the second round. Do you think like a Tevin Jenkins falls? If it's not someone like that, who, cause you know, Will Hernandez is not going to be re-signed, right? And you know that they're going to draft their replacement. In fact, they're probably just going to carpet bomb the draft in terms of the interior offensive lineman. Who, who are you targeting? Who do you love?
Okay, so for me, it's actually the center from Oklahoma, Creed Humphrey. And I'm not sure if he's going to fall to the second round, to be honest, but he's definitely a huge target for me. I also like maybe a little bit later in the third round, Aaron Banks from Notre Dame.
Yes, yes. I think
Davis.
But why do you think he falls to the third round? The guy's a beast.
I'm not really 100% sure where he's going to end up going. I do believe that he's a beast. And honestly, second round, that's something that I don't feel like is far-fetched. It's kind of weird to where all these guys are going to go. And I'm not really 100% sure where to value them in such an uncertain year. Like I look at, say, the tackle, right? Like Walker Little. Where's Walker Little going to get drafted? Well, Walker Little, we haven't seen him since the first game of the 2019 season when he tore his ACL. And then he opted out of 2020. But the guy has incredible athletic ability on tape, incredible tape, and he's gigantic. And he's like a prototypical NFL tackle. But I have no idea where that guy's going to get drafted. He could go in the 20s or he can go in the late third round. So some of these offensive linemen, I'm just a little hesitant as to where I'm going to like fully put them because I'm not 100% sure, especially those opt-outs.
Right. Yeah, and I think we still have a long way to go as far as the offensive linemen go. We haven't really hit many yet on our podcast. I know Nick had a chance to watch Wyatt Davis. I've had a chance to watch basically only Dickerson. I like him a lot. He's probably somebody who's up my list. I think he'd add a lot to this specific scheme, too, to this blocking scheme. But I think like what you said could be true here, where there's going to be tackles that fall into that range that can immediately slide into guard. And one player who I think I've liked throughout this entire process, who gets literally no buzz ever, for whatever reason, just because, again, this tackle class is deep, this offensive line class is deep. But Jalen Mayfield from Michigan, I think he is going to be an NFL player, and he gets no buzz. He'll be there at 41, and I think he could play guard as well. So there's a lot of players that I have my eye on. Obviously, I want to do a little bit more work before I get back to you. But like Nick said, it's going to be a weird season like with COVID and with all the opt-outs. But I think, right, like you said, what you said is true. There could be some guys that could convert at that spot from tackle to guard, and there's some true interior offensive line prospects that could be there value-wise.
I would love to see Aaron Banks back there, though, dude. You're talking about tackle size, tackle length, huge, just paves dudes on those down blocks, man. And even, like, moves sort of well. It doesn't always look pretty. It's not always completely refined, but he gets the job done, and that's what you kind of need to do in the NFL.
Mm-hmm. So one thing. So watching the line play is easy on YouTube, right? I mean, you typically just watch whatever is on YouTube. The receivers, the tight ends. Do you guys have all 22 film somehow at the college level, or are you just doing the same thing, just watching the ball go down the field, not really seeing the route tree?
We have all 22.
So. Yeah, we both have access to a bunch of all 22 from college.
And so is that something you guys just pay for?
We do, yes.
All right, genius. Okay, well, we'll keep listening then.
If you're interested, we can send – I mean, I don't think it's too much of a secret. We can give you a link if you want to pay for it. That's something you would want to do, or any of our listeners who are listening in. If you're interested in kind of doing your own version of this scouting and you want to pay for some all 22 from college, definitely hit us up. We can give you a link
to
this.
Cool, thank you. All right, thanks, guys. Keep it up.
Take care.
Thank you, man. All right. Are you there yet, Apurva? Because otherwise we are going to throw in Dom. We've been waiting patiently. You there, Mr. Shaw? Does not look like it. So we are going to move on here and bring in Dom. What's going on, Dom? You there, Dom? Dom is probably our
He's there, here. Dom? Dom's here.
Dude, Dom's, I love seeing you every week, Dom. No fail. Yes. Every week.
So my question is that So I've watched a lot of college football, and of course, what I continuously see is, you know, the stars is Jalen Waddle and Smith and Chase, and of course, as someone who's just watching the games, those names stand out, and it would be exciting to take a wide receiver, but just looking at the team, I can't agree with you guys. I would be very mad if they took one of them, even though I know how good they are. And they're the guys that I've seen play the most, because I've never watched Sewell. I've never watched Slater. I've never seen most of the guys on defense play. But I just know that it's not a need right now. And guard / tackle, I think there's a good chance that either Lemieux Hernandez or Pert are going to suck. So I feel like if Slater's there, it's a must take. And even if he's not there, I don't know this guy personally, but just from what I read, I think the guy from USC who can play guard and tackle is a must draft, because at least you know you're filling in a solid piece on the line and he can replace a terrible piece, because one of the three probably will end up sucking. So I really would find it hard to not go with a guard or tackle in the first round. Or I could be okay if it's an edge, but I see wide receiver as a way, way, way lesser immediate need. So I would be upset if they took, very upset if they took a wide receiver in the first round.
So I understand what you guys think where you're coming from here, Dom. I totally get it. But I think it's important to note that, and this may not be the perspective of everybody, but I know it is the perspective of me and Nick. You just can't draft for need. You can't look at a draft and say, I don't need this position. I do need that position. I'm going to go with that player. So if those guys are graded right around the Waddles and the Smiths of the world, who will likely be there, we don't think Chase will make it there. Ja'Marr Chase. I'm not sure Kyle Pitts will make it there. I think because he has that tight end name label next to his name, he might actually have a chance to slide, which would be a mistake in my opinion. But I ultimately don't think he'll make it there. So I think it will be between Smith and Waddle for the Giants at that point. But ultimately, if they do have the same grade on Slater as they have on Waddle, or even just a slightly lower grade, let's say overall, they feel like they're pretty comparable players for their position, then I completely agree with you. Like, you know me, Dom. I don't really believe in investing in skill players very highly. I definitely don't believe in going crazy at the skill player position. I totally believe that you don't do anything in this league without a line. And what you said is true. It's a great point. Like, when you're putting out a second-year fifth-round player in Lemieux, you struggle mightily in pass pro. A fourth-year guard who, yeah, he was the 34th overall pick at one point, but has been average his whole career, and a second-year, basically late end of the third-round pick. Matt Parrott was selected in those compensatory area. I mean, he was almost outside of the top 100. You're putting a lot of risk on the field. And like you said, there's probably a good chance that one of the three will bust. It's math there. I mean, like, there's a chance, I guess, you can get lucky and they're all good, but it seems unlikely. So,
but at the same time, it's not just that. I also think that they could find a wide receiver, if you flip it in the third round, that has a better chance by, say, week 5 or 6, if someone gets hurt, of being in maybe an okay number three guy if Slayton or Shepard got hurt, and being okay, not killing you. And if you have time to throw him the ball, like, pick a guy that'll be there in the third round. If you're going to tell me that Shepard or Slayton are going to get hurt, say, at one point, and you draft a wide receiver in the third round, I'd be more comfortable playing that guy in three wide receiver sets over playing Lemieux or Hernandez or Pert.
I totally get it from that standpoint. I mean, I think we're spot on. Nick, how do you feel about this, Nick? Why don't you weigh in?
No, I feel similarly. I'm not going to throw a fit if they draft Jalen Waddle, because I do understand what he can give an offense. But Dominic, I understand where you're coming from. I do believe that this offensive line can be problematic if they do not progress like the Giants coaching staff feels like they can progress. And I think it could be. What's up?
Exactly. When you if you're a Giants fan and you go to sleep on the night of a game, you don't go to sleep and worry about how Darius Slayton's going to do. He's good. He might not ever be great, but he's good. You don't need him to be great. If he's a number two, he's fine. Like, I don't think that's a big – I think he's fine. You know what I mean? Yeah, of course, it feels like fantasy if they go and get a Chase. And, no, I've seen them play a lot. They're great. But do we need two great guys when you also have Shepard as a third? And you have Barkley, and they play two tight end sets a lot, and they have, like – four tight ends. Like, I think it's overkill.
I wouldn't say it's overkill, though, man, because how many snaps did we see of C.J. Board, Damian Ratley, and all these bums last year? I mean, we saw quite a bit, to be honest. And I like Austin Mack, too, and I think even Dante Pettis is somebody that can kind of crack into the rotation, which leads to your point. And I don't think you're wrong, but I am going to go BPA if I'm Dave Gettleman. Now,
well, I do agree with you that you did see those guys a lot, but also that was partly because Pettis wasn't there, because Austin Mack was still young, and also because Gettleman didn't take a late round fourth, fifth, sixth shot at wide receiver, which we hope he does this year. So maybe if they draft the guy in the fourth or fifth round and they have an actual training camp, that guy could be developing, could be okay to play. That's where I'm seeing it more. But
I mean, Dominic, also, ultimately, though, man, ultimately, they're going to go interior. Like someone said it before, they're definitely going interior offensive line because Will Hernandez is going to be a free agent next year, man. Exactly. And then you got who? Zach Fulton, Kyle Murphy, freaking Shane Lemieux for two spots, bro. Like they're definitely going interior offensive line at least once, probably twice in this draft. I think someone said carpet bomb the position. I think that was Notorious. And that's 100% accurate right there.
I also see a big – I also see a big hole, and I know it might not be the BPA at 11, but I see a big hole, and I don't think that they're in a spot where they're so good that they can just go in any spot. I see a big hole at edge. Last year at edge, there were games where they got sacks, but it was because the coverage was good. Guys were just sitting there with 5, 6, 7 seconds to throw. They have nobody at edge right now. If Carter and X-Man are not healthy.
That's what it's all going to come down to, too, the return of both of those guys. I still think they can scheme pressure solidly, but you're right, you're still going to need guys to play edge. For me, it's more, can these edges set the edge against the run? I'm really, really big on that, to really kind of force these offenses into third and long situations. Don't give anything up on the ground. And I believe Ryan Anderson's a good addition on that, but you're right, you do need some juice. I don't think it's the biggest need in the world. Like, if you look at the team right now, you would say, yeah, that's definitely a need. But I don't think it's, like, a huge liability, yeah. I think I would say. But, yeah, but I think they're definitely going to be addressing the edge position. Hopefully,
Dom, it's a boogie, and Dom, you know? Real quick, Dom, here's the thing with edge in regards to this draft class. Yeah, if there was a Chase Young available for the Giants, wherever they were picking, let's say they had an earlier pick in this class, whatever it was, or last year, then, yeah, you obviously scoop him up. Edge is still clearly a need on this roster. But edge is also probably the worst position in this draft class if you look at it. As a whole, I can't really think of too many positions where it's worse. You could stretch and try to take a Jalen Phillips at 11, which I think the Giants are actually going to strongly consider doing. But when you're doing that, you're taking on a massive risk. This is somebody who had concussion problems in the past and literally retired from football at one point because of concussions. Like that, taking that at 11 is a major risk. And that's
why
you have to eventually talk yourself into these types of edges because, again, they're so rare. And this isn't just like a phenomenon, like occasionally this happens. This is why everybody wanted Chase Young. This is why everybody thought that it was so much better to get Chase Young than any of the tackles, because edges don't grow. Edges are, maybe in my opinion, the hardest position to find in the draft on a consistent basis from year to year. So, and I will say this one last thing about edge. I think based on Patrick Graham's system, it's not as big of a need for this Giants team in Patrick Graham's system as it would be for a lot of other teams, for any kind of 4-3 traditional team, for a team like with a wide nine, like a Jim Schwartz style defense. In the Giants-specific system, I don't actually think edge is as important. I think they can find different guys who can come in and mix in and find ways to generate pressure using sending extra blitzers and things of that nature that we saw last year. So to me, it's definitely a need, but I wouldn't force. Again, it's just for me, it's all BPA.
But do you guys think that if they went wide receiver in the first round, that they would get the same quality of, say, and say they went edge in round two, think they would still get a starting level guard in round three? That's more my concern. That if that with the need, the place they need, they might not end up getting it filled if they wait till the third round for a guard or an edge. Do you think that there's a starting level guard or edge in the third round? Because if they went wide receiver in round one, then they'd have to be waiting till round three to get one of those.
Yeah, if they didn't end up trading up, which, you know, we're not really all for. It's kind of hard to say, just like I was saying just before, it's kind of difficult to value some of these guys up there. Like Aaron Banks, I think he would be gone by our third round pick, but if he would happen to slide, that would be amazing, but I don't necessarily see that happening. So Are there starting level guards? I mean, there are so many unknown guys in college football this year. So many of those smaller conferences didn't play. So if the Giants scouting department is really on top of things, maybe they could land somebody, but it's kind of difficult to say.
I mean, According to the Giants, they landed what they consider a starter in round five last year. So you could look at it like that. Like it definitely is possible in that sense. But I also think it's important, Dom, this is not to say this is the right way, but the way I view the roster building process via the draft does seem to be a little bit different than yours. I would not go into a draft saying, I have these needs, I need to make sure I get them filled round one, round two, round three. For me, it would truly be about selecting the best player. And if I enter this 2021 season with a couple needs on paper, I'm fine with that because I'm looking at this thing long-term, building the best possible roster and making sure I do everything I can to find players that will be successful hits for those four-year cheap rookie deals against the cap. I don't want to take any kind of risk and look back saying, well, I didn't think this was the best player at the time of taking him in round two or round three, but I said I needed guard, or I thought I needed edge more.
No, of course, I understand. I meant if it was like a close grade, like a Parsons.
Sure. Yeah.
A Parsons, a wide receiver, and a Slater, and I would think that a Parsons and a Slater would be clear spots that could help the team more this year, and they're similarly graded players.
Oh yeah, no, I totally get it.
No, of course, and I don't think I would take the risk and take a Jalen Phillips in round one because of the injury, but I'm thinking a Quincy Roche in round two.
I would put Roche probably in the third round.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of Roche. I think Roche reminds – I'm not big on what I've seen from Roche.
Okay, then that's fine because you've seen a lot more than me. I haven't seen anything. That's just from what I read. So, all right. Thanks, guys.
All right, Dom, thanks, bro.
Yeah, thanks for joining us, Dom. Love to have you on every week. All right, everyone. That's all the time we have on today's show. Thank you for everyone tuning in again, as always. We'll be doing these every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. on Locker Room App. So thanks again for joining us. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk to you soon.
How do I touch? I think I forgot this. Oh, it's gone. Okay. No, it's not gone.